dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. It's episode 258, so in honor, I was a little late. It's your host, Ify Wadiway, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, my personal favorite and the internet's favorite film critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
What's good? I'm a little late digging into this, but season 2 of Physical is happening on Apple TV, and ooh, I love that show mainly because it is a great platform for Rose Byrne doing the difficult woman, as they say in talking about, you know, the complicated protagonist of contemporary television. You know, we have the difficult men, and now finally we've also got some difficult women, and she is one of my favorites. I do also love its early 80s aesthetic, which also kind of plugs into the movie we're talking about today. A lot of aerobicizing gear, a lot of leg warmers, a lot of big frizzy fried out hair. So yeah, I'm delighted to have it back.
Yeah, no, I'm delighted for you to be delighted, because, you know.
Okay, you like a leotard with a high cut. Come on.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, what was that J-Lo video? Whichever was the one where she was in the 70s dance, that changed my life. And someone else who's changed my life is none other than super festival programmer, producer, and queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark. What's good?
What is good with me is today, the very day we're recording this, mm-hmm, I finally got to meet, mm-hmm, friend of the show, mm-hmm, recent guest, mm-hmm, Maria Lewis, in, yes, person.
Didn't give me a call, nope, at all.
As a friend of mine likes to say, thanks for the invite.
Yeah. Just, hey, iced out.
You know, this is for us. Let the girls have it. But it was wonderful. Maria's been a guest a couple of times on the show. She is based in Australia, so not here often, and so meeting someone that you've met and just developed a friendship with in digital and electronic and modern seeming ways, getting to sit down and have a meal with them is a delight. Plus, she is as hilarious. She's more hilarious in person. It was awesome. And she brought me Tim Tams, which are these. Ooh. Do you know them? They're like a wafery cookie with, yeah, cream
can
in
you,
them. From,
can you Tim Tam slam?
I don't know what it is, but my guess is yes.
You bite the corners off and then you suck in a little bit of coffee and then you like hoover the whole thing into your mouth.
Ooh.
There are YouTube videos about this. I'm not making this up.
That is a thing. Okay, well, I'll let you know. TBD. Yeah. TBD, yeah, on my Tim Tam slamming abilities.
Another cliffhanger. I love it.
Oh, you're right. You're welcome. Yeah. Anyway, it was a delight. Hi, Maria.
Yes, yes. Hello, indeed.
Yes, hope your trip is great, Maria.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of friends of the show and amazing folks, we have editor of the upcoming Shudder documentary, Queer for Fear, directing the upcoming documentary, Heretics, and real genius superfan, David Kittredge. Woo! What's good?
Hello, thank you for having me. I am so thrilled to talk about this movie. I'm thrilled to actually be out of the edit room for a minute. But I am not the only editor of this series. So this series, Queer for Fear, is coming up on Shudder. It's starting in September, and it's a history of queer horror. So if I edited all this myself, it wouldn't premiere until like 2028. There would be no way. So I have a great team of people, and it's going to be really good. We actually snuck the first episode at Outfest just a couple of weeks ago, and it was just very exciting. And Alonzo is in a great deal of it.
Apparently.
I know this. I have literally cut him into the Avid timeline. Be like, we need a little Alonzo here. And then there you go. I put you in. But, you know, because I've been working so much, I haven't really seen a lot that's going on right now. I've been kind of trapped in old movie land. Although I know that David Lynch's Lost Highway, which is one of my favorite films, just got an amazing remaster. We just did a theater run, and I think it's coming out in a 4K Blu-ray, By Criterion in a bit, and yeah. I cannot wait for that. I'm very, very excited, but not as excited as I am for the 4K Blu-ray of Real Genius, which is completely remastered from what I understand, and has the deleted scene of Val Kilmer in the lounge chair with the balloons floating outside the window, which is in all the trailers,
okay,
but not in the movie.
Rein it in, Kittredge. We're getting there.
I cannot wait to talk about
this.
I'll
say,
have no
he
idea.
Is the perfect guest for this episode for so many reasons, and one of those other reasons is visual. That I popped
oh, yeah.
in,
yes.
and he's wearing a ringer tee that says "I Heart Toxic Waste," which is very famously one of the shirts worn by Val Kilmer in this. It's
indeed.
Spot on. You're in the right place.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Iffy, what's good?
What's good with me is, you know, I had a little bit of a Michaels trip. You know, I went to Michaels for that custom framing. I bought a lot of art at San Diego Comic-Con, and guess what? We're going to put that art on a wall. So it feels good. A lot of people have been like, oh, you're a fancy boy who can afford framing. And I was like, yes, I am, because that shit was way too expensive. What the fuck? You know, it's probably, I don't know if that's going to be the first and last time I get some shit framed, but no, I can see why I've been doing it myself. God damn.
I want you to know that you said you've been to Michael's and then you followed up with framing, but I'm going to stick with my original vision of you just getting, having a crafternoon for yourself.
Yeah,
crochet
needles.
Gone out, getting some of
say,
the like fake florals.
A couple of bags of googly eyes.
Oh. Yeah. Well, today's movie was selected by Max Fun Drive Prize winner Andrea D, and it's the 1985 laser engineering comedy Real Genius. Since this is young Val Kilmer's second movie, we'll have a quiz about the early work of some other actors. But first, it's time for Itadick. But a very special episode calls for a very special Itadick. So instead of this week's movie news, we're going to go back to when Real Genius was released in August 1985 and do Wittedick. Was this important? Do I care?
Join us as we take a journey back through time.
Trey, why don't you kick things off and take us back to the past?
I will, because I love speaking of movies. So, John Carpenter will direct and Kurt Russell probably star in a new film. That is right. It was announced by the New York Times on August 9th, 1985. John Carpenter has his next film set. It may see him pair once more with actor Kurt Russell, who previously starred in Escape from New York and The Thing. The movie is called Big Trouble in Little China. Carpenter describes it as, quote, an adventure comedy kung fu monster ghost story about the imaginary world underneath Chinatown where the ghosts live, end quote. That's also how I would describe it, incidentally. 20th Century Fox president Lawrence Gordon swears that Big Trouble is not a kiddie movie. The budget is reported $18 million. Was this important? Did you care?
I've still never seen Big Trouble in Little China.
No.
It's good.
I'm not avoiding it. It hasn't happened. It will happen.
I think this is part of a larger conversation in which you have to include Space Camp, which cost more than that and was even more of a disaster that came out, I think, that year.
But
that was the Top Gun summer.
But in late 85, when he's giving this quote about it not being a kiddie movie, I think you were saying,
right.
Like, for example, I was going to get into this later, but, you know, Real Genius, Weird Science, and My Science Project all opened in a 10-day period, and they all flopped. There was a lot of, this was coming off of the first wave of the John Hughes successes, you know, with 16 Candles and Breakfast Club. So there were a lot of teen-aimed movies that were not bringing them in. I think, like, this is around the time of, like, movies like Explorers and Daryl, yeah. And, you know, like, there were a lot of Project X. Yeah, you know, and I was 18 that summer.
Was
so,
Short
yeah.
Circuit count in that?
That was a hit.
Oeuvre?
Well, and Real Genius wasn't like a flop. It did okay. Mm. My Science Project, I thought, was a flop.
That was a big flop, and Weird Science underperformed too. Yeah.
I don't remember how Big Trouble in Little China went.
Oh, it was a huge flop.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Huge flop.
It's got. Yeah. It's one of those, like, oh, yeah, if you kind of watch it now, red flag central. Like, it is, there are so many questionable, like, Oh, just choices. Asian references. It's one of those of like, oh, just put all of them in a kimono or whatever. And you're like, that's not how culture, race, that's not how anything works. But I do want to shout out Kim Cattrall in this because she's fantastic. I have a real soft spot for Kim Cattrall. So if this was 1985 and we were doing this as a real-time Inadick, I would say this is important because Kim's career needs to grow. And I care. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, she hadn't been cast yet, so you'd be a soothsayer.
Oh, you're right. Kurt Russell wasn't even in yet. Although, I'll high five to John Carpenter for just unleashing the raw, bold charisma of young Kurt Russell and being like, you know what? I'll put you in scary stuff. I'll put you in weird-ass action stuff.
I'll put you in an Elvis biopic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good for that. I'm assuming from Iffy Silence that Big Trouble in Little China was not big in the Waterway House.
No, not at all. I think at this point, my dad was still in Nigeria. My mom still in Louisiana. Me still a twinkle in said dad's eye.
Oh, dear Lord.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Right now I'm just floating, waiting to come on out.
I need a drink.
Yikes.
Seriously. Buckle up. All right, God. So this next one's about physical media, so I'm assuming it's for me. This comes from the Los Angeles Times. The Video Software Dealers Association had their convention this week, and attendees hope to hear about new movie titles coming to their shelves in time for the holidays. But so far, the only blockbuster tape that's been announced is Ghostbusters. Said one video store owner, "I was counting on E.T. this Christmas. That would bring so many people into my store. It doesn't look like Gremlins, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, or Beverly Hills Cop will be getting fall VHS releases either. But if buyers want to take home a copy of the new Exercise tape from Jane Fonda, they'll be able to pick one up for the low, low price of $39.99. Was this important? Did you care?"
$39 was so expensive back then. That's so much money.
But also that's what new VHS titles were going for. If they were like even priced to move, most VHS titles were like $99.99 and they were just selling to rental stores.
Ooh.
We did not. Yeah, I do. I will say I read this article and it is a wild ride. It is so funny because it has more than one person at the Video Software Dealers Association convention bemoaning the fact that there's literally, so it's the Christmas season, and out of all of the studios, all of the platforms, there is a single new title that they can get. And in fact, it is Ghostbusters. Like, the can you imagine now if you were like, well, we're gonna, I mean, surely not enough things end up in physical media, and we've definitely spoken that to that effect, but the idea of, oh yeah, Christmas season, don't worry about E.T. We'll push that this summer. Don't worry about Gremlins. It'll come out sometime.
And Ghostbusters opened theatrically in 84. So this is like a movie coming to VHS a year and a half later. E.T. came out in 82 and didn't come out on VHS until 1988. So like the idea of windows, really, like they weren't windows, they were walls back then, you know. They were you would just wait for stuff. And then obviously it would, the more and more that home video became popular and that the sell-through market grew, it got a lot tighter.
I feel like my family, I don't remember us owning any VHS tapes. I remember having them, renting them. I remember like taping over things on the same blank one over and over again. But like, I don't, do you know, you like, I think of the albums I know my family owned, I think of whatever, but VHS tapes.
I think in 86, 87, I started getting like catalogs and I would buy older titles like
Movies Unlimited.
Yeah, I remember buying like the Out of Towners on VHS for like somebody in my family, the original one with Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis. But yeah, for the most part, I think like the idea of video that was priced to move didn't come around till later, and a lot of times it wouldn't, that was necessarily after it had been on VHS for a while. Like I remember when I first moved to Los Angeles in the 90s, the upper floor of the Virgin Megastore, they would have all the new releases for sale, but they would all be $100, you know, but it's LA, so people
Alonzo,
would spend that.
Were you perusing this catalog when you were leaning against your well for boys? Is this in the same sort of?
I was not a boy by that point. I was an undergraduate. Thank you very much.
Ah, all right. And this is while I was still a twinkle in my dad's
eye. Yes. We're all clear on that.
Okay, that's fine. You've heard of the motion picture Ghostbusters. You okay, guy?
Ghostbusters? What type of cinemized?
Oh, what? That one with Finn Wolfhard and Paul Rudd, right?
How dare.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, that's going to be something that hurts my heart, that there are people who think of that. I tweeted this week that the people are searching for MILFs and not aware of the movie that coined the term.
Oh, wow.
Which was The American Pie. And there were some kids who replied that was like, yeah, that's me. I'm like, so this is what it feels like.
Boom.
Mom, taste it. Show some respect.
When I was growing up, I had the VCR TV combo. Oh. I also had the VCR recorder, where you would gauge it perfectly, where, in between of whatever you taped, that's where you put your smut. So they would start it and it'd be some anime bullshit. And they'd be like, okay, this is iffies. But if you went a little further.
Oh my God. I mean, I should have expected that that's where our VHS combo would go.
Yeah.
That's on me. Yeah.
On brand.
Yeah. You know, those were the days, Now kids can just delete their history. Before you had to hide it, whether it be in bushes, under the mattress, between VHSs, or that's how I knew how to hide folders on computers. My hiding has upgraded with the media type.
If he had a video that said something like strawberry shortcake on it, just so no one would play it.
Tough guy action films. No girls allowed.
Yeah. Well, normally this would be the part of the episode where someone else reads another news story. But instead, hi, I'm producer Marissa.
Hi, Marissa.
And I'm coming in to explain how just a few days ago I had a dream. I dreamed of my beautiful Max Film hosts. And in the dream, we were recording this Real Genius episode, and I had a brilliant idea, a genius idea even, in the me in the dream. And it was, I was going to read you all your horoscopes from a 1985 newspaper, specifically from August 9th, 1985, which is the official Friday release date of Real Genius. So who wants to start? Tell me your sign.
Capricorn, the take charge sign.
Yes, shocking no one. So this is from the astrologer Carol Ryder.
Oh, yeah.
Says, know how you want your labors to trend and look into new inventions that can make the work easier.
Listen, in 1985, I was probably super into, what's the name of this thing in Goonies that Data makes with the connective? Rube Goldberg. The inventions I was into at the time, that could have been really applicable. So thank you, Carol. Thanks for knowing that what I really wanted to do was have ultimately a boot far away from me kick my brother. And then what I would do to make that happen would be an invention involving pulley systems, maybe some blocks, probably.
Well, plus, this was just right after the release of Back to the Future, which famously opens with a big Rube Goldberg machine situation. So that's very timely.
Oh, okay.
You might have seen that movie and had an idea to create a Rube Goldberg.
Or maybe they got that
a real
from
fiction
me.
We're creating.
Yeah.
When I think of inventions of 1985, I just thought of dot matrix printers,
Also, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which came out in 1985, famously starts with a gigantic Rube Goldberg machine.
Yes, that's right. The breakfast machine.
Yeah.
Rube was hot.
I am a Taurus.
Yeah, ooh. You are. Best friends.
All right. So this is kind of a bland, but here we go. Study your financial status carefully and plan how best to increase your income.
Oh, God. These are like fortune cookies. They don't even give you fortunes anymore. They're just these sort of bland aphorisms for living your best life.
Well, that's a daily horoscope for you. Here's another one, actually. This is from Stella Wilder. A good day to start a project. But be sure you decide upon a plan of action before you begin.
Yeah, look at how specific, Alonzo.
More aphorisms. Who else? What are y'all signs? Let's go.
How about you, David?
I'm an Aries.
An Aries. Oh, how perfect that we have four signs for four hosts. Control tendency to analyze everyone today, or you may find that you are soon on the spot yourself.
Burn.
Ooh. Damn. God is.
Are you going to take that from her, Dave?
I noticed, Marissa, that you, when you were saying that, you might have had something on your mind. Why don't you talk about it?
Well done, well done. What's on my mind actually was the typo that is in this horoscope. Is that what they meant to say? All right, Iffy, I know you're a Pisces.
Water baby.
Right,
yeah.
The day before mine, I think?
Yeah.
So
February 26th.
That's the day after mine. All right. Keep rooted to home and real estate affairs and improve them considerably, and you will gain benefits in the days ahead.
So, yeah, you were sperm at this point, correct?
Yeah. So I think they were saying, don't come out yet in 1986. Wait till 1988 to really start swimming.
Hold fast.
Yeah.
Hold fast.
That was not your time.
The real estate in question being your dad's balls.
Yeah. Wow.
The real estate. Oh.
Funny because it's true.
Yeah. This is what the dream foretold, that the conversation would come to this.
Yeah,
I'm glad we all found some real meaning in this segment. And with that, I will leave you.
Thanks, Marissa.
Thank you so much, Marissa. That was great. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll talk about real genius.
So you've probably heard about microdosing. If not, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good.
And we all deserve to feel just the right amount of good. Whether you had a long day at work or prevented the government from using your science experiments for bad. You know, sometimes you just need to pop a delicious Lumi gummy and just chill out on the couch. So why don't you go ahead and do that? And look, we got something to help you do that. Ain't that right, Drea?
Indeed. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code MAXFILM to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that is microdose.com, code MAXFILM.
Maximum Film is supported in part by Masterclass. With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace.
So I have definitely spoken to you guys about how I am interested in taking the Kris Jenner masterclass, but genuinely I dove into my first one, and it is with Pulitzer Prize winning biographer historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, who is teaching a class on U.S. presidential history and leadership. And I know that sounds like, oh, that's real homework stuff, but I feel very lost and frustrated politically right now, and so grounding that in some history was very helpful. And I'm also hoping to balance it out. Amanda Gorman, the youth poet laureate that I've spoken about before, also has a master class, and her class is about creating poetry and light. So to balance out all of the bummer history I'm taking in, you know, you need one and then the other.
So check it out today. Get unlimited access to every masterclass. And as a Maximum Film listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/maxfilm. That's masterclass.com/MAXFILM for 15% off masterclass.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Whiteyway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
David Kittredge,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today's movie was one of a few options that our drawing winner Andrea gave us to pick from. She said she put it on the list because it is very much of its time, but doesn't get talked about as much as, say, John Hughes films. When we saw there is a 4K remaster coming down the pipeline next month, we knew this was the one.
I just want to say, and a reminder to everyone listening, that this drawing happened during the Max Fun Drive.
Yes.
And we set a whole level where if we hit this level, we'll let someone choose
stretch
it.
Goal.
And that's how, and so I would also like, this is my name twin. And you'll see, Iffy's already said her name differently both times. So to Andrea, 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 however you say
know, one
it.
Of, one of them will hit.
Thank
one of
you them will, for
you know,
playing. Say,
yes.
Thank you
for being
supporting.
A supporter. And thanks, to, every, thanks to everybody who got us to our stretch goal and who was entered into this drawing.
Yes.
Sorry that you all lost to Andrea, but I'm not sorry because I love this movie.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. As you were. As you were.
Yes. Yes. Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a brief synopsis of Real Genius?
I will give it my best shot. So Mitch Taylor is a brilliant young high school student who is recruited to go to Pacific Tech, which any resemblance to Caltech is purely coincidental, by the famous Professor Jerry Hathaway to work on a project that involves lasers. And that project is being headed up by the brilliant and unpredictable Chris Knight. What Mitch and Chris eventually discover, however, is that this is not any laser project. This is actually a laser from space that Jerry Hathaway is making for the U.S. government, pocketing the government money while making the university pay for it, and his students do all the actual work. When they find out that they have been flim-flammed, brilliant revenge is taken.
Flim-flammed! Yes, you flim did! Flam.
Yeah, yeah. You know, taking us back. Flim-flam, thank you, ma'am. sorry, I cracked myself up. So David, what do you love about this movie?
Oh, what do I love about this movie?
How should you count the ways?
Yeah, how can I count the ways? This movie came out at a very impressionable time in my life. I did not see it in a theater, but I did see it on home video when it came out a few months later, probably in 86. So I would have been 14. And it just, I mean, it really spoke to me because it was a very rare thing to have a comedy, an accessible teen comedy that values intelligence and creativity. It's kind of like, I mean, Revenge of the Nerds has not aged well, but it's not a bad movie, like, especially if you saw it at that age. But it's the exact opposite. Whereas Revenge of the Nerds is kind of like, oh, these geeks and, you know, racial minorities and gay people, like, they're meant to be held to ridicule. They're the heroes, but they're basically meant to be laughed at. Nobody in Real Genius is kind of laughed at in that way. Creativity and intelligence and brilliance and genius is treated as a gift and something amazing and positive. And as a kid growing up in Philly, which was not, I would say, the most culturally progressive place, nor was it the most... I was in an environment that didn't particularly value creative intelligence at all. So to see this was like a real, it really helped me. And plus, it helps that it's just hilarious. I mean, the movie is absolutely hilarious. It is gorgeous. It is brilliantly directed, brilliantly written, brilliantly acted. And, you know, when you put it in the pantheon, the genre of teen comedies, or it really stands out. It's really smart. It's really well done and really well put together. And all of these teenagers have very distinct characters. Many of them have arcs, and it's just a very rich and wonderful movie.
Yeah, the fact that Val Kilmer's character at one point declares Pacific Tech smart people on ice, like that, that kind of, for me, encapsulates a lot of what is so appealing about the movie. Because, yeah, I think in most teen comedies before this, you know, whether it's your Animal Houses or whatever, the idea was that, you know, your heroes were lovable doofuses. And anybody who was like spending a lot of time doing schoolwork or interested in literature or science or anything like that was,
or the arts,
yeah, or the arts, yeah, was either some like Poindexter nerd to be laughed at, or maybe even the outright villain for some reason or other. And here it's like, no, everybody who got into this school is smart. So that's just the baseline that we're dealing with. And then it's like, are you cool? Are you an asshole? Are you uptight? Are you learning to kick back? Are you learning that, you know, the power that exists in being a smart person, and that you actually, you know, the people in the world need you and need you to be that? That is something I've always found really appealing. And then I love the script of this. Val Kilmer, you know, in the documentary, Val, I was really disappointed that he barely talks about and kind of sloughs off his first two films, Top Secret and Real Genius. But I think those are like some of my favorite Val Kilmer performances. He's so funny. He's so charming. He is doing the kind of like Bill Murray snark of that period, but doing it in a way that felt really kind of fresh and not like airless, that I love what he's doing here. And I did immediately start wearing like, gimmicky t-shirts under unbuttoned short sleeve button down shirts.
Which style you've continued to remain committed to.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I only saw this for the first time a couple years ago. I was alive, not to like put it in Iffy's face. Some of us were already born. It didn't come out like at a point where I was the target audience in any way. So I saw it much later when I was babysitting, and I saw it with my friend Marnie, who was like, "Oh, you're gonna love it. I love it so much." And I watched it. Maybe it's because I was tired and cranky because I was babysitting as an adult. But I was like, this movie is so stupid. I'm so annoyed. And then when I rewatched it for this, I was like, well, if I was I owe my friend Marnie an apology because there's so much wit here.
Yeah.
Like, strangely, I felt a lot of the joke structure felt very English to me. Very, you know, there's something about the callback or the twisting of words. It's so much wordplay and so much literal response to something that's meant to be rhetorical or whatever. Like, there, it's very witty in a way that obviously went over my head the first time around. So I appreciated that. And Val Kilmer, we've discussed, so beautiful, so witty. And when I watched this, I was like, there is no world where Robert Downey Jr. did not audition for this, because Val Kilmer is playing Robert Downey Jr. And then if you watch it as someone who has only seen Tony Stark through Robert Downey Jr.'s eyes, I was like, yeah, he's playing Tony Stark. Like, it's that whole energy is very much the wild, natural kokai of Robert Downey Jr. And Val Kilmer is wonderful at it. I'm not like, oh, he's a poor man's RDJ, but there's, to me, it was a very, oh, I recognize what you're doing, and I completely associate it with this other actor who would have been more age appropriate for this role.
Robert Downey Jr. was busy doing Weird Science.
He did Weird Science this year and Back to School the following year. So, yeah,
that's right.
I was just thinking like that. Unlike Holly Hunter in Broadcast News, like, this character loves being the smartest person in the room all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
If he was this your first viewing?
Yeah, this was my first viewing, you know, much to everyone's surprise, even though this seems like a movie that I would have come across and like. And I think, like everyone's saying, yeah, this was one of the very few movies that really tries to be like, yeah, being smart is cool. And if you're smart, you can have fun. And there are cool, smart people, and kind of like almost rejects the notion within the movie, which is like, yeah, no, it's very cool to try and like find out, you know, experiment and be, you know, creative with your intelligence. And that was actually really cool to see, because you're right. The nerd in this time period was always like the dumb dork who like is being weird and is there to be bullied. And this was the first time that I was like, no. And even within the nerds, there was levels, you know, there were bully nerds, and then there was the chill nerds, and then there was like the innovative nerds, and there was the question mark autistic nerd.
Girl, we can talk. I would very much like to discuss the sole female who is 100% on the spectrum. And I feel like that actress, Michelle Mayrink,
I love her.
Love her so much. We were talking about Valley Girl before we started recording. Like, she's in that for a little. She's phenomenal. But she's so good in this. And part of me felt like, oh, I feel she is leaning into the spectrum elements, because she is a 22-year-old actress whose love interest was legitimately 15 years old when they were shooting. And I think she was like, yeah, there's only one way I get out of this, and that is I need to feign some sort of disconnect of age appropriateness or anything. But she was so good. And I say that it's also that difference of, I could identify and say, oh, sure, in 2022, I look at that character and think, yes, she reads autistic, but not as an
functional
insult,
right?
Like, as a, oh, no, that's just her brain works very quickly. She does not have the same social cues, but none of those are to put her as the butt of any joke.
Oh, no.
It's just like, oh, we've given interesting character layers to all of these, and this is one of hers.
But I think you're pointing to something really interesting and really important that puts this film in a different area than all the other films, because it is an incredibly pro-female movie for a teen comedy. That is not something you see a lot of. Again, Revenge of the Nerds, completely not.
Yeah, very rapey now.
And to no small, no small credit goes to the director, who is Martha Coolidge, who is really one of the most underrated directors of that period. And I wish I think she's still working, right? Yeah. She's mm-hmm. still doing movies. But it's just like, she, between Valley Girl and this, and later she did Rambling Rose. I mean, this is somebody, and she ran the DGA. I think she was the head of the DGA for a while. She's phenomenal. The way that she gives Jordan, Michelle Meerink, the way she shoots her, the way she deals with those interactions, she has total agency and total power on a completely equal level with all of the guys, and it's never an issue.
Yeah.
To see that in 1985, that was still not very common to see at that point. I mean, I don't know how common it is, and even now it's more common, but in 1985, that movie was really, like, again, a breath of fresh air, like, just for the way it treated its women.
There's even an interesting sort of proto-sex-positive angle on the secretary who's sleeping her way through the smartest
Patty Darvinville. Yeah, she's sleeping through the 10 greatest minds on earth.
Yeah,
you know, which of course someone decided they were all men. But yes, yeah. that she's checking them off a list, which is such a thing
that,
like,
she doesn't name them all. We don't know that
you're right. Good point. Good point.
She doesn't name them all. I want to think she's out there.
This movie was more progressive than we thought.
I hope to think so. But yeah, I do like the fact that she gets. This is the kind of thing, again, in an 80s comedy, you'd have some Lothario who is making his way down the list of, like, the Swedish, you know, bikini team or whatever. But that she is like, no, yeah, I'm getting through the top 10 minds on earth. And you know, one of them clearly who died in her company. So clearly she knows what she's doing. But yeah, I know. I think,
that's like, the most, the writing just of that delivery is so subtle. It's just this, like, you 100% know that what she's explaining is that this person went out in the best way possible, but it's completely subtext. It's
yeah,
completely
old Professor Hostetler, isn't he dead? He is now.
Someone knows all the lines.
And
I do. It's sad how much I know.
And I'm kind of shocked that Dave hasn't already gotten here, but this movie is shot by Vilmos Zsigmond. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
The other thing that stood out to me about Real Genius is it's low key, but Alonso mentioned when he was doing the summary that the turning point for our, like, band of genii is when they discover that this laser they've been trying to build and perfect the whole time is going to be used as a weapon, and that in fact this other absurdist character we've met also previously left the program because he found out his work was put in this. And this movie was a couple years after War Games, right? Like,
yeah.
There's this strange sort of crossover of something of, like, youthful and whatever that ties into government and military, and that it's, to me, that also read as kind of modern in the sense of, oh yeah, it's shocking that this stands up, that these kids are like, no, we don't want any part of our intelligence and work put into the
Val Kilmer, you know, would be in Top Gun a year later. You know, this is the first flush of the Reagan era. Like, the whole SDI thing, the Star Wars program, was this thing that Reagan thought was going to save us from nuclear war, and they spent untold trillions of dollars into these, like, satellites that were going to knock nukes out of the sky that never worked. So yeah, so this movie was very on point in terms of where we were in the technology at the moment, but also very much kind of like bucking the rah-rah 80s thing and almost harkening back to more of a post-Vietnam cinema of, like, do not let your work be exploited by the warmongers and turned into, you know, instruments of death. That's the subtext of this, like, wacky teen comedy, but it is there.
And you have to say, like, also, they did do an enormous amount of research into actual pranks that were done at Caltech and replicated them in the film. I forget exactly which. I think the one with the car being disassembled and put back in someone's room was something that happened at Caltech. And I want to say the ice hallway was too, but I'm not sure
I had such a crush on the dude who made the ice hallway.
Oh, ick.
And then
ick.
then he doesn't show up again. I was like, what?
No, he's throughout the movie. He's like,
but just
he's
in like small little pieces. I just was like, what's in his backpack? What's going on with that?
But he's
big cherries.
Exactly. But he's
a giant cherry.
He is part of the plot as it continues. And I think that the finale is, again, like I hadn't really thought about this before, but I think this is sort of shouting back to, it's the kind of thing like the Yippies would have done. You know, like when Jerry Rubin and them were trying to levitate the Pentagon, the kind of mega prank that they do on Professor Hathaway at the end of the movie really does kind of harken back to that sort of 60s spirit of kind of like prankish anarchy.
Hell yeah. Well, you know, let's go ahead and do the review. So, you know, who wants to kick things off?
I will say screen it for sure. I was lucky enough to see this movie in theaters in 1985 as a grown-ass man. No, I was 18. But anyway, and I have gotten to see it on the big screen in Los Angeles. I took Dave to see it to like a 35th anniversary screening or something crazy like that a few years back. And again, if you're watching it streaming somewhere and it's not Letterboxd, turn it off. Because again, Vilmos Stigmon, really like gorgeous widescreen cinematography here. And I think an underrated 80s classic. And I'm hoping that this new 4K that's coming out will maybe boost its reputation.
I'll buffer. I will why not screen it? Don't do it while you're babysitting. You'll get distracted. You'll find it petty and you won't be into its charm. But yeah, I think there's a lot here. There's also I just need more people to watch it and be distracted / transfixed by Val Kilmer's eyebrow length. Or sorry, sideburn length. Please just watch it. I couldn't look away. His sideburns were all I saw for 40% of this movie, and yet I'm still giving it a screen it, which really has to say something.
There you go.
And also have your popcorn ready before you watch it, because you're definitely going to want it by the end.
Dave?
Do I get a vote?
Yes, of course.
Oh my God, screen it. Are you kidding? Here, let me count the ways. It was one of, if you go even further into it, it looks gorgeous. It sounds gorgeous. One of Thomas Newman's first scores. Yes. Thomas Newman, who became a huge composer later. I think it was one of Brian Grazer's or Brian Grazer's first producing effort, who then became the uber mega producer for Ron Howard. So much talent in this film. It is just a delight. And I think that it would have been, you know, higher rated had it not been a teen comedy, like a horror movie, like, you know, the horror movies that get, you know, discovered years later. Everyone thinks that John Carpenter's The Thing is one of the best horror movies ever. But at the time, could you find one positive review of it? No. Real Genius even got some positive reviews, but it is absolutely ripe for a whole new generation of people to find it. It is wonderful. And please, please, please watch it. It's great.
On that new 4K.
On the new 4K Blu-ray, yeah, I cannot wait. They have deleted scenes, which no one has ever seen.
I know someone who can watch a 4K on like, what is it, 72
I think.
What's the size screen that you could possibly watch that on?
Well, I'm upgrading it. I have on my sweet 72, 75.
Sorry,
4K,
which I'm gonna upgrade to 85 soon. I'm gonna get it mounted, real theatrical experience at
going
home.
Going back to Michael's,
got the surround sound. Yeah, go
for some washers.
Googly eyes around the corners.
So, what's your real genius vote?
Oh, my real genius vote is screen it. This is truly like not only this feel like like. You know, when you watch movies and they have like the nostalgia of like the era the movie comes out, not only does it has that, but like we all said, it has this progressiveness to it. That's fun. So I'm all about on big screen it. If you can, I'm sure now that it's going to have a 4K remaster, we might see it pop up, maybe get a rescreen somewhere, you know. I'm going to push it, you know. I'm going to talk to Vidiots. We're going to see what we can do. You know, I'm going to make what needs to happen. But y'all stay right there, cuz we'll be right back after you hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
Hey, it's John Moe, host of Depresh Mode, a podcast about people's mental health journeys. Guess who we got? Guess who? It's Jamie Lee Curtis.
I look at life now as the game of guess who, which is simply the process of elimination. I know what I don't like. That's how I found out who I am.
Jamie Lee Curtis on addiction, show business, and fooling people, all on Depresh Mode from Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Manolo, we have a show to promote. It's called Dr. Game Show.
It's a family-friendly podcast where listeners submit games and we play them with callers from around the world.
Oh, sounds good. New episodes happen every other Wednesday on MaximumFun.org.
It's a fast and loose oasis of absurd innocence and naivete.
Are you writing a poem?
No, I'm just saying things from my memory. And it's a nice break from reality. Are we allowed to say that?
I don't know. It sounds bad.
It comes with a 100% happiness guarantee.
It does not. Come for the games and stay for the chaos.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
David Kittredge,
Drea Clark.
And now we have another quiz, which we all know how I feel about these. Marissa, just come and get it over with.
No, it's me, Marissa, again. But I think you're going to know the answers to some of these for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We already established that this was Val Kilmer's second movie. I was going to ask you guys, what was Val Kilmer's first movie? But not only did you say it multiple times, top secret, during the episode, but you also talked about it before we even started recording. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to name the second movie and then the first movie of a few people. These are all kind of from, like, nothing like classic Hollywood. Because once you got back too far, it's like they made so many movies that every movie star was in a bunch of movies nobody ever heard of before they were in the things they're famous for. But I didn't pick anything that was a TV movie or like only a cameo, only movies that people had, like, it was a feature length, they were credited, so, and it
prominent.
Was in cinemas. Okay. Those are the criteria. What should be the buzz-in word, you think?
Popcorn!
Oh, popcorn. I like it.
All right,
popcorn.
I like
popcorn. Popcorn. So we say popcorn in order to answer?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, I get it.
So this person's second film was Heat. Their first film was Leon, the Professional.
It's popcorn.
David.
Natalie Portman.
That's right. Did I say that right?
She's in
Heat. Is it Leon or was it Leon?
She's in Heat. She's the it's Leon the Professional, yeah. She's the Al Pacino's stepdaughter who tries to kill herself.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Spoiler alert. It's a very old movie, but, you know.
Don't remember.
Spoiler alert for Heat.
She doesn't succeed. It's all good.
Spoiler alert.
By the way, there's a shootout at a bank, too.
With Val Kilmer.
With Val Kilmer. Yes.
All right. So for the next star, their second movie was Too Fast, Too Furious. Their first movie was Baby Boy.
Popcorn.
Iffy.
Yes, I love that confidence.
You know I gotta do it for my man Tyrese. Go on and hold it down for my man Tyrese Gibson, the owner of too many Transformers, a man who was way too logged on. Needs to get off his phone. And Marissa is correct. I did know one. This is my one point.
Okay, I'm thrilled. This next one, their second movie was a voice performance in a film called Space Chimps. The first movie was Hot Rod.
Oh, a popcorn. Andy Samberg. Oh.
That's right. Andy Samberg is correct. Yeah.
I couldn't think of his name.
Sure.
As I sit in a room with Brooklyn Nine-Nine writers all day.
Yeah. I was really doing a trivia the other night, and I was really trying to think of Jeff Goldblum's name, like one of the most famous actors.
Yeah.
And I realized he doesn't seem like a Jeff at all.
Yeah,
I've known his name my whole life, but Jeff Goldblum, really? That's that guy's name?
That's like that whole joke on 30 Rock where Michael Sheen played a British guy named Wesley Snipes. It's like, I look more like a Wesley Snipes than he does.
Which is funny because it's true. Yeah.
All right, moving along here. The next person's second movie was Mystic Pizza. Their first movie was called Satisfaction.
Oh, popcorn.
Y'all play on me. I'm gonna go with Drea because I heard you say, oh.
Julia Roberts.
That's correct. All right, four questions and one point for each of the four of you. I love it.
I suggested the word. Good Lord.
Okay. So, not counting a cameo in their technical feature debut, this person's second film was Bachelor Party. Their first film was Splash.
Popcorn.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
All right.
Although,
is that what everybody was going to say?
Everybody was going to say Tom Hanks.
Although, wasn't he? I thought he was in He Knows You're Alone.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, but I thought that I.
No, it's a supporting role.
A cameo. Okay, right.
No, he gets axed. Does he get axed to death?
Something like that. It's a slasher movie that he's in.
Yeah.
All right. Bonus points to Alonzo and David. The internet told me it was a cameo.
If Jack he texted Talents. Me that movie, he should also get bonus. He was like, all right. Very upset.
The next person's second movie was The Greatest Showman. Their first movie was Spider-Man: Homecoming.
Do you trust popcorn?
Popcorn. Oh. Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be Tom Holland.
No, popcorn.
Zendaya. We've got
it's Zendaya.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, that was her first, huh? Yeah.
Tom Holland isn't even in The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
You think I saw The Greatest Showman?
Wow. Who was he thinking of in that's The Greatest Showman?
Zac Efron.
It was his son.
It was Hugh Jackman's son, Tom Holland.
Sure. I like that casting a lot. Yeah, I mean, look, she had been in so many TV movies and TV shows by that point because she was like a Disney star, right?
Yeah.
But technically, Spider-Man Homecoming was her first, feature film on the big screen.
Hmm.
Well, well, well.
All right. So next up, we have someone whose second movie was called The Last Supper. Their first movie was The Mask.
Popcorn.
Alonzo.
Cameron Diaz.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
okay.
The Last Summer was that weird movie where the liberal friends try to kill conservatives and it all falls horribly wrong. Yes. Yeah, it's a reprehensible movie. Yeah, it's terrible.
I think it's being turned into a Broadway show.
I think I'd rather see The Mask on Broadway.
Schmoken.
Just not Son of the Mask.
That's The Mask, right?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. I mean, I nailed it. It was a perfect execution.
Boom.
Yeah.
Like you were in the room.
All right. We just have a few more here. Okay. This person's second movie was the Sex and the City movie. Their first movie was Dreamgirls.
Popcorn.
David?
That would be Academy Award winner.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. No. All I can think of is...
Jeff Goldblum.
No. Respect. What's her name?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Why am I not here? I literally work with footage from her today. Oh, my God. Jennifer Hudson. Oh, there you go. Thank you. That took a moment.
I was going to guess Liza Minnelli, so.
That was. Okay.
The screams of the many listeners.
Jennifer Hudson.
They're going to take away my gay card.
I have been.
They will take away my gay card. They will snip it up in front of me like a bad credit card.
I have been on game shows and had that same cloud. Like,
You'll remember when 3 minutes ago I yelled my name instead of the word popcorn. So this is a safe space. Yeah.
All right. We're in just a couple more here. This actor's second movie, not counting shorts or uncredited roles, second movie was Saving Private Ryan. Their first movie was called Strays.
Popcorn.
Yeah, iffy.
Vin Diesel.
That's right. It is Vin Diesel.
Look at you getting all the Fast and Furious related questions right.
Gotta get my family in.
And who directed Strays?
Was it?
It's like, it wasn't Penelope Spheeris, was it?
It was Vin Diesel.
Oh, it was Vin Diesel.
That was his Sundance movie.
Yes. You saw it, right, Alonzo?
I did not see it. I was at Sundance that year, though.
And, I'm sorry to this man. I do not know this man.
So just so you know, Drea's responsible for Vin Diesel's career. She was the one who was like, you got
and
it.
Every choice that, you know ever that made.
I would happily take that if I could also get a commission.
Right. Yeah. The right answer. All right. This is the last question. This person's second movie was called A Soldier Story. Their first movie was Carbon Copy.
Popcorn.
Alonzo.
Mr. Denzel Washington.
I literally said this movie.
Yep. More than once, I think. Yeah. And I watched the trailer for this movie. I don't think I want to watch it.
Yeah, go.
Late era George Segal, early era Denzel Washington.
Yeah. I mean, the cast, great. The content of the movie,
two great tastes that taste weird together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That was amazing, everybody. You all did so well. Woo! Thank you,
Marissa. Good game.
One, I think, but I started keeping score, iffy. And then you were all doing so well that
pretty sure iffy won.
Yeah.
Okay. Congratulations. And good night.
We did it. Woo. Well, thank you so much for doing a quiz that I did enjoy. No, thank you once again, Marissa. Coming in, doing amazing quizzes, yes. Getting us riveting, getting some riveting competition right as we jump right into our next segment. Staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start? I'll do it. Yeah, unprecedented.
Please.
I'm kicking it off.
That's because a thrill.
It's a different year. It's a different time. And so I wanted to go ahead and do a movie that this movie reminded me of, which came out in 1983 by John Badham, War Games. That was a movie that I saw as a kid, and I was like, this is rad. Video games are cool. I'm gonna be a streamer someday. It kind of gave me the same vibes where I looked at something nerdy and cool, and I was,
you felt seen.
Felt seen, much like in this movie, mostly by the horny aspects, not necessarily the smart aspects.
We all glean what we get, you know. My pick is also an 80s movie that is also new on Blu-ray. The Paramount Presents label just put out a new Blu-ray of 1987's Back to the Beach, which is a comedy that reteamed Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello about 20 to 25 years after their heyday as the king and queen of the beach party movie, in a very knowing comedy with them as parents dealing with a whole new generation and returning to their old haunts and finding that, you know, Dick Dale is still playing surf guitar at the nightclub near the beach. I watched it again last night, and I was thinking, this movie walked so the Brady Bunch movie could run. Like, it is so it is so kind of meta and ironic and, you know, satirical, but in a loving way, and observational in an arch way about the relatively innocent media of the past and what those characters look like in a more, you know, cynical modern age. And, you know, I think at some point we've run out of innocent media of the past. I think at some point even kids' media became sort of like knowing and winking and in on the bit. And so they didn't operate in the sort of pink fluffy bubbles that Frankie and Annette and the Brady Bunch and cultural icons like that did. So anyway, also directed by a woman, Lyndall Hobbs, out of Australia, who does a really good interview on this Blu-ray, and a film that I think deserved better when it came out, deserves better now. I hope that people catch up with it. I wish the Blu-ray had more on it. The interview is good, but like, there's not even a trailer. There's no other extras or deleted scenes or whatever. But if you've never seen it, I would say check out Back to the Beach.
Nice. I remember loving that, and I loved all of like Beach Blanket Bingo. I loved those movies.
Yeah.
Yay. I'll go. My movie has nothing to do with Real Genius, but it is now out and available for rental. And that is exciting because it is a film called Dinner in America that premiered at Sundance in 2020. And was so good, was reviewed really well. People love it. It's this punk rock love story that's sweet and unique and edgy. Like, it's so good. It's Kyle Gallner and Emily Skeggs. It's really unique. It's such a fun view. And they couldn't find distribution forever. And that's the kind of thing that frustrates the hell out of me with smaller films that don't have like big names to them. But this is a worthy and enjoyable rental if you are looking for something that's both light but has some interesting edge to it. Dinner in America. High recommend.
That sounds cool. I will go back to Martha Coolidge, the director of Real Genius, and say the movie she made just before it is fantastic as well. I prefer Real Genius, But Valley Girl is absolutely a delight. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can literally stream it for free. It's about a girl from the Valley, played by Deborah Foreman, who has a cameo in Real Genius, a very memorable one, as a lady who tells Val Kilmer what she requires in a man, which is not something that Val Kilmer has. It's in a very memorable scene. And later starred in a really underrated horror movie called April Fool's Day, which she's great in. But Valley Girl also stars a very young, almost, I think, his first lead performance. One of his first performance, Nicolas Cage, as someone not from the Valley, from LA and kind of in the punker scene. And will this mismatched couple, like, you know, be able to go out? It's romantic. It's sweet. Other people in it, Michelle Mayrink from Real Genius is in it. Elizabeth Daly or E.G. Daly from Pee-wee's Big Adventure is in it. But it's sweet and lovely and romantic and very funny. And again, extremely female centric, and you know, giving all of the women characters in it absolute autonomy, absolute agency, and more than enough screen time. It's a wonderful little movie. Catch it, Valley Girl.
Valley Girl would make a great double feature with Dinner in America, which also has that Dinner in America is very Midwestern, but the same sort of, like, one of them's punk. Well, they're both sort of punk ultimately, but anyway, I think those would play well together. I'm excited that you said it right after mine. What a thrill. The serendipity of that moment.
Oh, well, you know, I just think all that's left to be said is thank you so much to David Kittredge. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, anytime. Anytime you want to come back, let us know. We got to get you in here talking about them moves.
And thank you again, Andrea, for speaking of Valley Girl. Yes.
Andrea. Drea, we don't know. Maybe she also is a Drea.
Anyway, you
have good taste. You have good taste in movies.
Definitely. Yes. A fine choice. And again, thanks to everybody who supported Maximum Film during this year's Maximum Fun Drive.
Yes, please.
It'll be Maximum Fun Drive again before you know it. So just be ready.
Start thinking now of what you want us to watch. Dave, please. How can people find you online or, you know, enjoy what you do?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram as my name, David Kittredge. After Queer for Fear goes up on Shudder in the fall next year, I'm hoping to finish and premiere the documentary I've been working on for a few years called Heretics.
Awesome.
Very, very excited about that.
Excellent.
Yay.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. Always a blast to have you here with me.
Thank you, sir.
And it's always a blast to have you, the listener. Yes, I'm talking directly to you now. We've broken the fourth ear wall, and we're talking directly to you and asking you hey, if you got a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. And we'd love it if you write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and maybe we'll read it on air.
We need more of those. It's been too long.
Make it happen.
It's great.
Help us.
Listen to me try and figure out how to pronounce your name. It's fun.
For all ages.
Yeah, all ages. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org, where you can send a voice memo with your question for our hotline. Don't forget that.
Or just type it out if you don't want to.
That too. Yeah, if you don't want us to hear your voice, you can do that. But, you know, the closest thing you can get to being a guest on our pod is just, you know, having your voice heard that way. Our super producer is Marissa Flaxpart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.